Welcome to my podcast series. It's called Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. Today, I'm interviewing Dr. Dori Mintzer. Dr. Dori Mintzer, who's an experienced therapist and expert in retirement transition. She is a co-author of The Couple's Retirement Puzzle, the 10 must-have conversations for creating an amazing life together. Since the focus of this series is on positive aging, Dori is a perfect person to add insight based on her extensive experience. For more information on Dori, please refer to the bio attached to this podcast. Well, welcome to the series, Dori.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jan, for inviting me to be here with you.
Well, thank you. I met Dori several years ago at the Saging International Conference, and then we reconnected at the conference this year. So I'm going to ask you some questions that emerged during your session at the conference, since it was well attended and people were very interested in the topic.
Great. I'd be happy to do that. I wanted to just mention, too, in addition to being a therapist, I'm also a coach. So just to put that little other hat on me, too.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's good to know. What's the relationship between health, relationships, and sexuality? And how do these topics change as we age? Or as we say in saging language, we're not aging, we're not getting older, but we're gaining in life experience. So how do these topics change over time?
It's a really wonderful question and an important one, because I think throughout our life, health, relationships, and sexuality constantly are changing, because our bodies are changing, our attitudes about our bodies are changing, our awareness of ourselves vis-a-vis another person are changing. And, you know, the phrase, it takes a village to raise a child, I am a believer that it takes a village throughout our life, and also as we get older. There are many issues that get going around health, relationships, and sexuality. You know, we live in a pretty youth-oriented culture, and so many people think that it's going to be all downhill after age 50 or 60. And I wanted to start with the sexuality part and then kind of dovetail back to the health and relationships. It is true, our bodies change and gravity has a way of working, but I do want to say that sexuality and sensuality is alive and well throughout life. And I think it's important for people to know and embrace that.
I think that's an important point, yes.
So, and, you know, we all need touch. We all need intimacy, both emotional and physical. And I think it's important for people to just recognize that it is a very important part of life. And if you go with the attitude that, you know, you're not going to be a sexual being as you get older, that probably will end up happening, but it certainly doesn't have to. It just does not have to be that way. But health as we get older can impact that. And I think it's important to know that. I mean, what we know is that by the time you're age 65, it's less about our genetic background and much more about how we take care of ourselves. You know, how we exercise our body and our brain and spirituality. And the better we take care of ourselves, then often the more we can be in touch with just that vitality and the, you know, as they say, keeping the juices flowing inside, which is so important. But there are, you know, we live in a stressful world, and stress, you know, can diminish your, you know, kind of sense of desire and feeling good about yourself. And there are many physical, you know, issues as we age that can have a bearing, you know, like depression or anxiety or heart disease, diabetes. Mm-hmm. But none of them have to be stoppers. If you can, you know, sort of be open to the fact that, you know, we're not 20 years old anymore when you get to be 50, 60,
right,
70, 80. And, you know, and if you're expecting yourself to perform as you did when you were younger, you're going to disappoint yourself and maybe disappoint your partner.
Right. And this is one of your 10 critical conversations that people should have and continue to have,
right,
correct?
And absolutely. And it's often a very hard one to have. I would say sex, death, and money are three, you know, pretty difficult topics for people to have, but it's really important to have. And, you know, some people are in relationships that have been over time, and, you know, who you were perhaps in your, you know, 20s or 30s, you're a different person as you get older, and the person you married, if you married, you know, or have been in a partnership for that period of time. We all go through changes through midlife and beyond, and many relationships are able to kind of go through those changes too, so people are able to stay connected and nurture the relationship, which is really important. It takes time and effort to do that, but we also know that not everybody's able to do that, and that the divorce rate in the over 50 population is increasing.
Right. And how do you have how do you have this conversation, or how do you start this conversation? Because I think it is a tough one to have.
Yeah, I think with all of these conversations, there's a kind of a bottom line part that I think is important, which is trying to think about using I statements.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably have heard of them, and maybe some of your listeners have. But basically, to be able to say, I'm feeling, or I've been thinking about, or, you know, this is hard for me to talk about, but I really want to talk about our sexual relationship. I want to talk about how disconnected I'm feeling from you. Or
mm-hmm.
So if you start with an I statement rather than a you make me feel, or you should be doing such and such, or you didn't do such and such, the you statements tend to be more blaming and shaming.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if that's... You know, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, that's true. I think that's very true. Yeah. So starting with I and
Starting with I and trying to avoid the you statements, because, you know, even if you don't intend it, with the you statement, the person tends to feel like they're being attacked and you get defensive.
Right. Yeah.
So that's part of it. And the other is really practicing what's called active listening. You know, I don't think any of us are born to be great listeners. And what I think often happens, I think in you know, the work you do and the work I do, you know, we're really trained to listen. And I think individuals, you know, in their relationships and in work can also learn how to kind of actively listen, which really just means not interrupting, making eye contact, and really listening and appreciating what you're hearing, even if you don't agree. And... You know, what I find often can happen is you hear the first few words and you think, oh, I know where this is going. And so you tune out and you're already thinking about how you want to respond, or you're interpreting it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, you know, you could be right, but you could equally not be.
Mm-hmm.
And that can become a problem in the relationship. So there are some techniques people can use, you know. So if I start out saying, you know, this is hard for me to talk about, but I really want to talk about our sexual relationship because I just feel like it's not being the way I want it to be, or it's changed, or I'm not comfortable with whatever it is. And ask your partner, before your partner responds, to just say what he or she heard, so that, you know, you're sure that you're being heard. And if not, you know, if he or she heard part of it, but not all of it, you could say, well, that's great. You know, that is part of what I wanted to say, but let me just try to say the other part in a different way, or just say it again, because this part's really important too.
Mm-hmm.
You're
so good
at that.
That way
you can check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been doing this for a long time. So.
Yeah, that's good advice. And actually, I wanted to follow this up with, there were a couple other questions that kind of relate to this. Given your experience, do you find that people, is it reality that some people experience what they call midlife crisis? And I know you mentioned the divorce rate is increasing in the 50 plus age group. I mean, I've read that too, so I think that's research. But what can we do about this? Those two kind of go together, I think.
Yeah, a couple of parts to that. One, you know, I think that there are a number of reasons why the divorce rate is increasing. I think partly, if couples have had children, what you hear over and over is that sometimes couples stay together for the children, but then have disconnected. And if there aren't a lot of interest that they're sharing anymore, many people feel that since we're going to live longer, why stay in an unhappy marriage? That's one part of it. The other is that more and more women are in the labor force and are less financially dependent on men. And what's been interesting is that it seems that there are more women who initiate divorces in the older population. And it seems to be that, you know, women are saying, I'm not as financially dependent. And if I've got 30, 40 more years, I may be better off alone than in an unhappy situation. So that's one part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other part of your question? I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, it was just about in terms of midlife crisis. And
oh, midlife crisis. What, no, that's a really important question. Yeah.
Divorces, yeah.
Right. It, you know, I'm not a believer that people have to have midlife crises. There's no question some people do. But what I think happens in midlife is that there are midlife shifts that happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess the way I often say it is that people kind of get nudgy. It's like you kind of look in the mirror and you say, oh, my gosh, who am I? Or, if, you know, who are you if you're in a relationship? Who are we? And if, in fact, you know, you've spent a lot of your life working or raising children or constantly doing, there may be that shift of saying, I'm tired of just doing and feeling like I'm on a treadmill. I want more time for me. I want to be more. I want, I want to do maybe some things that I wasn't able to do because of all of the responsibilities of earning a living or raising a family. And so there can be these shifts that happen of just, you know, wanting more being time and not running so fast. And the other thing that I find, and again, I don't think it's a midlife crisis, but I think there's this opportunity, you know, you were saying before in terms of becoming more sage, you know, owning our own experiences. There's an opportunity to really learn about these other parts of ourselves that we maybe had to put on the back burner. So, you know, I always like to say it's an attempt, and what's important is to let yourself think about becoming more whole rather than just old. But I don't know that it has to be a full crisis. But what is interesting in terms of some psychological testing, like the Myers-Briggs, in midlife there's sometimes changes of preferences or people open, you know, like for men, many men talk about kind of feeling a little bit more mellow, you know, and being perhaps a bit more in touch with the more feminine side. And women, you know, may have been more in touch with the more assertive side or allow themselves to, or if they've been driven, you know, might actually let themselves get more in touch with that softer side too. So that there's shifts that happen in relationship to just, you know, sort of how we're viewing the world. And I think also shifts in terms of how we view success. You know, when we're climbing the ladder and all, we're so influenced by how other people are evaluating us. And I think in midlife, I mean, I don't know that anyone's ever free from some sense of, you know, wanting to get nice accolades from other people, but I think there's much more that comes from inside.
I totally have
your own sort of standards. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's, in saging, we call it inner work, you know, where instead of focusing on what we look like, it's what are we really thinking, feeling, doing that inner introspective work. And I agree with you that I think this is a time in life when we can really look, grow, continue to grow, evolve, and look for opportunities. Yeah, that's excellent.
Yeah, I think it's so important to be able to do that and not feel like it's all downhill. I mean, I do think growing, evolving, learning. And the hard part in some relationships, though, is people aren't always on the same page. And there can be different health issues, different energy levels, different priorities and values. And, you know, it's like a dance, you know. You lead and the other may follow a little and then maybe lead in a different way. And
well, that's a good metaphor. I like that. Tell me more about that. So if they are not on the same page about priorities or goals or dreams in the second half of life, what are some ways of dealing with this?
Well, again, what you had asked before I think is key, which is, you know, hard but courageous and important conversations to have. And I don't mean even that they have to be long conversations, but just being able to bring the subject up and talk together and agree to disagree. And sometimes even being able to, you know, think about goal setting and activities together. Like in the book you mentioned that I co-authored,
yeah.
Actually at the end of each of the chapters, which are most important conversations to have, they're exercises for people to do, and there's what we call fun work rather than homework. But there are ways to try to reengage with your partner,
yeah.
Or you know, and or bring up difficult subjects. And it's not like there's no magic bullet and there's no magic wand. And the idea of the dance is, one can, in a sense, learn how to be a kind of a coach in your own relationship. So if, and even in the best relationships, we all need, more social contacts and other people. We can't get everything from one person. So
sure.
It may be saying, gee, I'd really like to learn to tango. And, and maybe even buy your partner a set of lessons or something. And then, maybe agree that once a month I'm going to plan something and once a month you plan something. So you begin to maybe do things together and find ways to enjoy each other. That way I was using the dance literally. I had meant it more
right.
metaphorically before. But you can try to either talk in a different way or do something in a different way and encourage your partner to join you. And if they don't want to, you don't have to be joined at the hip. And there may be important conversations about what are the changing expectations you have, and there's time together and time apart. But all of these things can be brought up. I mean, it just depends. If you're in a relationship where you've tended not to be able to deal with these things, it can feel daunting.
Right.
But just start with tiny little steps, like a 3-minute conversation or a 5-minute one, because you can come back to it.
Right. Well, and it's an excellent book, I will say that. I bought it right after I met you the first time. And because it is kind of interactive, there are all kinds of ideas in that book to help start the conversation. And I know that the subtitle is the 10 conversations that you should have. And we've been talking about one, but, you don't have to go through all 10, but what might be the top 3 topics if you had to do that?
Well, because some of them, I think, kind of merge together.
They do,
So I think finances, when I said before, mm-hmm. money, sex, and death are hard to talk
mm-hmm.
about, but
mm-hmm.
finances are important. We all have money messages from the past, and
mm-hmm.
it can really complicate how we feel about money, about spending it, saving it, investing it, and it can be a problem between couples. So
mm-hmm.
and so there are these money messages, and we all have sort of money personality types, but it is important to recognize money is actually a tool, and it's important because it will influence, if you still need to work for pay or if you can do volunteer work or not, worry about
mm-hmm.
any of that at all. Where to live, if you want to stay where you are, you need money perhaps to make your home accessible with changing, health needs.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if you want to move, or having money for leisure activities. Money is important
mm-hmm.
and it impacts so many other things. And I think the relationship part is so important. And within the relationship is the intimacy and sensuality and sexuality, expectations,
mm-hmm.
kind of sense of changing roles and identity, relationships with family. There can be much more of the yours, mine, ours, with second, third marriages, blended families, so different responsibility and obligations. So relationships can be big. And health,
mm-hmm.
as I mentioned, is another very big one. Given, the 30% genetic and 70% things we can control, the likelihood is at some point as we get older and older, we'll either be a caregiver or a care receiver
mm-hmm.
with our spouse or partner or children or parents. And And I mean, that's just a reality that happens. And, you know, and within a relationship, I mean, like there's a 13 and a half year age difference that I have with my husband, and you know, some of what we could do before, we can't do now. I mean, he can't deal with altitude as well. So we, you know, you change your dreams. You know, you find that's where the dance is. You know, you find where there are other things that you can do. And I think the other big piece, I always like to think of it sort of as a puzzle, but the other really important part is spirituality. And I think as we get older, just as you said before, you know, with saging, there's the inner work. And I think, you know, some people have been had a spiritual core throughout their lives, and other people haven't. But what I find is as people are getting older, and there are these shifts that I mentioned that are happening, it's not unusual that people are trying to make sense of the world and figuring out where do I fit into this larger universe that we're in? How can I give back? And so I think spirituality, purpose, and meaning are important. And you know, I'm very influenced by positive psychology, and you know, with the notion that well-being or flourishing is connection, engagement, and purpose and meaning. And you know, I think that that is important throughout life. And you know, when you're working, you know, you get that usually through work or through school or through raising a family. But if you're working in a different way or not working, it's really crucial to recognize how important that is and figure out how are you going to build in some structure, connection, engagement, and purpose and meaning.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And one of the sages in my life who I interviewed for my book is a guy by the name of Richard Leiter, and he talks about how purpose, the power of purpose, that's the name of his book, one of his books, and he talks about, you know, you've got to have a reason to get up in the morning, and what is that reason? You've kind of talked about this, but I did want to ask you about, you know, you do use the concept of puzzle a lot when you think about these issues. Is it just because they fit or they fit differently as people age, or how does that, how does the puzzle relate to the second half of life?
Well, you know, some people have a wheel of life, some have, you know, all kinds of different things. I personally like puzzle because it's a noun and a verb. So there are all these pieces that are different sizes and shape. And, you know, in the puzzle of life, they do not fit together perfectly, like in a jigsaw puzzle, because life's not perfect. But what I think is helpful is to think about in your particular life, you know, how big is the financial one and how does it relate to health and family and, you know, or which ones does it not connect with for you, and then you need to puzzle it out. So you need to think about it for yourself, and if you're not in a relationship, just for yourself or with, you know, whoever your friends are, siblings or adult children or whatever. And if you are in a relationship, you know, to begin to both create your own vision of what's important to you, but take time and have conversations to talk with your spouse or partner so that you can create, you know, a shared vision, with, you know, which is flexible and timelines, and because there are these curveballs that just have a way of happening in life.
Yeah, I love that concept of puzzle because I often use that in my visioning work. And I talk about, you know, if people can, it's hard to put a puzzle together if you don't have the vision of what's on the cover, you know. But once you see the cover and you have the vision, then you kind of see how the pieces do fit together. So, yeah, that's a great metaphor. Well, Dori, we could talk forever, especially on these 10 big topics. But I like to kind of close with, given your work, your expertise, all your experience, and the focus of this is saging, positive aging, what else should I have asked you that our listeners need to know? That's so critical. So it could be advice. It could be, you know, your top list of tips when you work with for couples. You know, you work with couples. Is there anything else that I could have asked, you know, that you think we should know?
Well, I work with individuals and couples. And I think I think one of the things that I would stress, I don't think it, you know, I think you asked some really great questions. So, but I think what's important is really taking time to value and appreciate yourself and what you've accomplished and what the perspective and wisdom is that you have, and to engage with your spouse or your partner or children, people older and younger, and share your stories and listen and value them. I mean, there's so much perspective and wisdom that people have at all ages.
Uh-huh.
And I really am a believer in intergenerational also. So I think it's good to have friends and conversations, you know, with people of all ages, because we can share and help people appreciate that growing older is not something to be feared.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's true.
You know, and younger people can, you know, help us understand sort of the different world that they're living in, having sort of grown up with technology in a way that we haven't. So I think the openness, I think really, well, it's a saging concept, but doing that inner work and really harvesting and appreciating the gifts that you have, your own wisdom, your strengths, and of those around you,
mm-hmm.
It just makes the world a nicer place of feeling, you know, having gratitude and being able to, you know, recognize and feel good about what you've accomplished and, you know, and to forgive yourself and other people.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of those things are important. And the key, I think, is finding a way to deal as fully as you can so you don't reach the end of your life with regrets. So
uh-huh.
I'm a big proponent of these, you know, must-have conversations, whether you're in a relationship or not, to have them with yourself or with other people, to be conscious and intentional as you go, kind of go through this life,
uh-huh.
so that you engage fully in whatever you're doing.
Yeah, I love those two words. You know, to be conscious and to be intentional. And
right.
I think they're really critical, as you said, at all ages, but particularly as we gain in life experience. So, well, Dori, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I appreciate the time you've taken.
Sure.
And I always like to say, you know, may the rest of life be the best of life.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for inviting me to chat with you. It was really nice.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.